session. Our first speaker in this session is Dr. Steve Kentucky, my colleague at Westmont, and he will be telling us about exploring the new atheist movement with Wilhelm Ostwald, early physical chemistry's new atheist.
All right. Well, I'm a chemical educator at a Christian college, Westmont College. And so I'm interested in how can I develop connections between my discipline, chemistry, and current issues in faith science dialogue. I gave a talk about this in terms of how to do it throughout a curriculum last year. Now I just want to give an example of this, of how you might do this for one topic. I chose the new atheist because it's a topical topic, and it's also an easy topic to do. Because to draw these connections, you can almost do it by going to a single paper in the literature and developing the connections from there. I'll be showing additional quotes, but you can do it from this paper right here by Caspar Hackfort called Science Deified, William Ostwald's Energeticist Worldview and the History of Scientism. Of course, this was published in 1992 prior to the development of the new atheist movement. So you want to have your students do a little bit of reading there so that you and they can draw connections. We have nice readings in the textbooks we use, but if you're not using a book like that, there are some wonderful articles on the Faraday Institute and BioLogos website that you can use to help your students draw those connections. So what is the new atheist movement? Why should we care about it? The new atheist movement really began here on September 11, 2001. No, it didn't come into public view. But the terrorist bombing of the Twin Towers convinced a previously unknown neuroscience grad student named Sam Harris to write a book called The End of Faith, Religion, Terror, and the Future of Reason. And the book comes across like the atheist argument from a college bull session. And it was radical in one respect. It was radical in that it didn't merely claim religion was wrong and belief in God was wrong. It claimed it was dangerous, right? It was harmful to society and civilization. This was shortly followed by a number of other books, the most notable of which are by Richard Dawkins. He wrote The God Delusion, and the philosopher at Tufts, Daniel Dennett, wrote Breaking the Spell, Religion as a Natural Phenomenon, both in 2006. And then, more recently, comparatively, the journalist Christopher Hitchens wrote God is Not Great, How Religion Poisons Everything. Together, these four writers are called the Four Horsemen of the New Atheism, and their writings cover the core themes of the movement. So if you want to figure out what the New Atheists believe, read those four books. It'll give you a good introduction to what the New Atheists believe. They all have the advantage of being clearly written. You might search in vain for a logical argument, but they are very clear about what they believe. Now, if they were just four books, we probably wouldn't be talking about them. The simple fact is these four books led to a social phenomenon. All of them were on the New York Times bestseller list. They sold a lot of copies, and they helped spur the development of websites like this Brights Network, just the tip of the iceberg, this Scarlet Letter atheist marketing campaign encouraging people to come out of the closet and stay out of religion. You know, admit you're an atheist. And then some foundations like the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Reason and Science. And, of course, it's led to numerous lectures and debates. So it's a social phenomenon. It's out there. In fact, it's primarily actually a web-driven social phenomenon at this point. And one of the reasons we care about it has to do with its characteristics. One of its characteristics is it's evangelistic. It's not merely content to say, oh, I believe this. I don't believe in God. You do. It's interested in convincing people that there is no God. Not only that, really to convince people that believing in God is wrong. It's immoral. It's harmful to society. They have an ad campaign really based on science or a claim about science. Science flies you to the moon, religion into buildings. Imagine no religion. And look at what they're showing there, the Twin Towers. So it's really based off this idea that religion is harmful. And tying into that, they actually leverage a lot of people's sort of apprehension about the role of the religious right in American politics. This is particularly evident during the second Bush administration. So they would set atheist movements on campuses, would have Sean Faircloth come and talk about the attack of the theocrats. And you'll see this sort of theme throughout the New Atheist books, particularly with Harris and Hitchens, that the religious right has caused harm to society and religion is harming society. Now, most notably for us is how the New Atheists use science. In the New Atheists, so the New Atheist science, the central sciences that they use are going to be evolutionary science, and then more recently, the cognitive science of religion, evolutionary psychology, and neuroscience. So these are the big sciences, and they all serve some purposes. Evolution, in a sense, serves as their grand theory of everything. They will use Dawkins' idea of memes to try and extend it into the realm of sociology and understanding society. And then the cognitive science of religion and neuroscience really are used for two purposes. One is to minimize the importance of religion by explaining it as a natural phenomenon, explaining why we shouldn't take it seriously, and to try and provide at least an apologetic argument for breaking the distinction between is and ought, fact and values, for trying to claim that science can be a basis for ethics. So science is really used here to construct an overarching worldview in the New Atheist. That's a distinctive characteristic of their use of science. All right, so how does Wilhelm Oswald relate to the New Atheist movement? Wilhelm Oswald was early physical chemistry's New Atheist, before there was a New Atheism. Oswald is one of the three founders of the field of physical chemistry, and I know he doesn't always come up in Gen Chem textbooks. And he did many things that you may have heard about. So he founded the Journal of Physical Chemistry, the German Journal, which was the main journal at the time, really was the organizer of physical chemistry. And Oswald, Van 't Hoff, and Arrhenius are known as the three fathers of physical chemistry. So he's really a core leader in the development of modern physical chemistry, which, by the way, was the hot science of its day. This was the cutting-edge science. Now you can start explaining phenomena like freezing point depression and boiling point elevation using the laws of thermodynamics. Very, very powerful. In fact, Oswald was one of the first people to recognize that you can use the laws of thermodynamics to quantitatively explain a lot of chemical phenomena. And he won the Nobel Prize in 1909 for his work, primarily his work on catalysis, but also his other work was at least acknowledged as well. Now, Oswald had been very successful at applying the laws of thermodynamics to all sorts of chemical problems. He was also involved in trying to show the laws of energetics as a systematizing and unifying theme for the sciences. And in his hands, at least in chemistry, he found that thermodynamics was very successful, and energetics was very successful, and progress had been made. And there was this idea in the air that science was making progress, religion was keeping us from progress. And you see the same theme in the New Atheists. The Stone Age religion is keeping us from developing in scientific progress. He even says this in his Nobel Prize acceptance speech. He intimates it, at least, that the church is at pains to prove its teachings are compatible with science. In other words, the church has to acknowledge science as the higher authority. Now, just like the founder of the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Reason and Science, Oswald was not merely content to throw out his ideas in writings. He wanted people to act on his ideas. So he would talk about the media and influencing people. Oswald wanted to do that. He did it through his publications. But he also did it through an organized group, the German Monist League. And the word monism comes from the idea that there's one reality. We would today call it materialism, although in Oswald's hands it's perhaps better called physicalism. It was founded by Ernest Haeckel. And he had written a book called The World Riddle. And later, this picture is from the front piece of a book he wrote called Monism as a Band, Connecting Religion and Science. And these pictures show you some of the ideals of the League. Here you have Haeckel holding up the torch of reason and science against the backward forces of sort of the tradition and conservative elements in politics. They were in Prussia at the time. There's a Prussian aristocrat. You see that this holding up the torch comes about through science, the telescope and views of the stars. Again, the Galileo affair writ large in their collective consciousness. This is organized league, and the DMB stands for Deutsche Monistenbund, German Monist Band. And so Oswald took a leading role in the league, founded by Haeckel. And the league was not just geared to promoting atheism, it also had an anti-religious character. And this anti-religious character, they mainly based on the use of evolution as an argument against religion, provoked a response from Christians. The Protestants formed the Kepler Bund, or the Kepler Band, which mainly, in its early days, focused on attacking evolution. More helpfully was the Catholic response, actually, particularly that by the Jesuit zoologist Eric Wasserman. He was studied ants. They used to call him Father Ant. In fact, here he is looking at an ant under a microscope with a cross in it. And he, in 1907, took on about 11 monists in the famous battle over the evolution problem in Berlin. Literally took on all comers and used surprisingly contemporary arguments based on the limits of science to argue that, you know, this was compatible with religious belief. And so there were these public debates, just as in the new atheist movement. Now, under Oswald, the monist movement changed in several significant ways. First, it began to be more involved in the German church withdrawal movement. This was an organized campaign to get ordinary Germans to withdraw their church memberships. It also had a political component to it in that the Social Democrats were involved. They wanted sort of a protest against the Prussian aristocracy's role in the church. But Oswald joined it as an atheist. He stood on the stage in mass rallies in public campaigns in Berlin, urging ordinary Germans to renounce their church membership, to leave the church. They even had paperwork you could fill out right there, and they would file it for you to leave the church. Here's an invitation to one such. This is not one that Oswald spoke at, but it says the mass strike against the state church. So he took this role in the church withdrawal movement. So similar to this Richard Dawkins Foundation. But more significantly for our purposes, under Oswald, thermodynamics began to become the central science of the Monist League. It's not that evolution wasn't there. It's just that it wasn't central. Remember that Oswald found energy, the energy idea, to be very useful. And here's how he tried to extend it. Look what he said. There really is an idea which bridges not only the chasm between force and substance, but also that between mind and matter, and which is of a nature sufficiently manifold to embrace the totality of all our experiences, the interior as well as the exterior. That idea we term energy. Right? Energy was sort of this worldview, became a worldview in Oswald's hands. And the second quote talks about how, in Oswald's view, anything useful or meaningful would be defined in terms of energy. He even developed ethical programs based on energy and social programs. The key idea is what he called the energetic imperative. It goes like this: waste no energy, turn it all to account. It comes from the second law. You know, every time you transform energy, you pay a heat tax. You don't want to be wasting energy. And he says there's no human action that can be brought within the viewpoint of this imperative. He, in fact, would use it to evaluate civilizations. He even would use it to justify eugenics. The weak can't labor. All right? So you could use this energy idea to advance some of the same ideas that people were using for evolutionary theory. The new atheists do not support eugenics, by the way. He even developed a sort of Oswaldian eudaimonia, a philosophy of life, reducing happiness to an equation, which I will be happy to explain to the curious after this this talk. Now, I'd be willing to bet that most of you find Oswald's energeticist ethics and philosophy of life to be kind of silly. And I want to encourage you not to do that. Oswald didn't find it silly. Haeckel didn't find it silly. And ordinary monists didn't find it silly. See, monists had to contend with two claims, just like the new atheists do. The first is that Theirs is not a positive movement. It's an argument against something. Doesn't seek to build something. So the fact that you could say there's a sort of ethics, even if you have to demolish the distinction between is and ought to develop one, allows you to claim, no, this has some positive forward movement. The other thing that it allowed them to do is to respond to claims that religion was needed as a basis for morality. If you've ever read Sam Harris's latest book, The Moral Landscape, you realize this is really what he's aiming at. Well, this is what purpose Oswald's energeticist ethics played within the Monist League. Maybe it wouldn't convince a professional philosopher. Max Weber trashed his sociology. But it at least was good enough to convince the Monist faithful that they had this more worthwhile program. Now, another challenge that Oswald and the Monists had to address was, what about religion? Doesn't religion do good things for society? Don't people have these feelings? Oswald himself had earlier described having an almost religious experience after realizing something about science. And in Haeckel's hands, this took the form of sort of a vague pantheism. You know, science and the world are religious, treated as something of religious significance. In Oswald's hands, it was clear that he wanted science's worldview and the achievements of science to take the place of God, to fulfill the place of God that would normally be taken up by religion. Now, this didn't mean that he was willing to abandon religious forms and observances. In fact, he wrote at least 3 volumes of Sunday sermons. I've seen sources quoting as many as 6, but I've only actually seen the first 3. And these sermons were intended to be read at Monist gatherings on Sunday mornings, at the same time that the churches met. And here's the title page to the first volume. The titles of some of the sermons are kind of what we'd expect, things like Why Are We Monists?, how to do with Oswald's energetic imperatives. There are also ones on topics like truth and evil and immortality, even as one on Nietzsche. And these are things that we would kind of expect from Monist Sunday sermons. But there are also some more surprising topics, like prayer and Christmas. And what's even more surprising is that Oswald did not completely dismiss prayer or Christmas. He actually said that Monists should engage in something like that, prayer and Christmas. Now, this doesn't mean that Oswald took prayer or Christmas seriously. Rather, he looked at these things as an opportunity to incorporate, to use something that people had developed and to transform them by encounter with his physicalist, monist worldview. So, for example, we'll start at the bottom here. In Oswald's hand, what he wanted to do is he wanted to take the Christmas festival and say, let's take what we learned by science and celebrate that. And in fact, by celebrating Christmas, we're going to take science's achievements, like astronomy's understanding of the solstice, right? It becomes a solstice festival. And thermodynamics' understanding of energy, so now we understand what the Christmas lights are doing, and transform that scientific knowledge, the magic of reality, if you will, out of the more purely intellectual into the more varied and impressive realm of feeling. So it served a sort of quasi-religious function to sort of transform his scientific worldview into the realm of feelings. His view of prayer is actually very interesting because it's very similar to some of the New Atheist writings in that he said prayer is obviously achieving useful mental states. And through science, we can now understand prayer and learn how to do it and use it as a tool for transforming human consciousness. So it's clear he's not interested in really validating anything, any transcendental claim of religion. He really just wants to use some of the religious forms to bring his scientific worldview into the realm of feelings and to make religious observances sort of to put those within a scientific context and framework. He even encouraged the singing of monist carols, like this one here, which is set to the tune of Silent Night, Holy Night. And you could get the theme of these carols. You almost see Nietzsche's Superman in the first two lines, intellectual power climbing upwards from its beginnings in the animal kingdom, struggling and fighting to the right light. Talks about organisms detecting in their innermost being the meaning of life from the laws of nature. This is not a natural theology here. But he's talking, it's sort of, they would use these to sing these carols. Now, if the New Atheist movement got its start in a terrorist-fueled or induced international disaster, Oswald's energeticist program really met its end in a terrorist-induced international disaster, the First World War. And this happened because it provoked struggles over the pacifist and nationalist sides of the Monist League. But perhaps more importantly for our purposes, it represented the failure of Oswald's program. Right? We didn't see linear progress. We saw the dark side of technology. We saw a colossal waste of energy. And in fact, he resigned the presidency of the League, and much of his writings after this point go towards his color scheme and other sorts of endeavors. So the question for us today, when few takes seriously the ideals and ideas of Oswald's thermodynamics-based atheism, is what can we learn from that? Well, the tendencies that it represents live on in the writings and aims of today's new atheists, and Oswald's atheism can serve as a useful guidepost. It allows us to perceive important features of that movement, even as a point of contact to talk about important features of that movement with the clarity of hindsight. Thank you for your attention.
For several questions, I'll just let you field your own.
Steve? Well, that's an interesting question. It was actually a question brought up by my colleague this morning. We were talking about, what does this tell us about faith and learning innovation? Oswald, in some respects, went too far. I think it would be fair to say that his energetic worldview served to take him more outside the mainstream of science, particularly after it had been rejected by Planck and Boltzmann and the other leading physical chemists of his day. In some ways, some of the people complained, Dawkins doesn't do biology anymore. So I think we need to draw a very careful dividing line there and not say everything shows the existence of God. But I think we can bring everything into conversation with our faith. And absolutely we should use the social media, because the New Atheists know how to do that. They're all over the web. They have very compelling websites like you can see here. I mean, you have the Richard Dawkins Foundation, you have this nice sort of speak out, reach out, scarlet letter, come out of the closet atheist campaign, you have the Brights Network and other websites, very compelling message boards. So they're sort of out there, and people estimate that only 6% of people
we're classifying themselves as atheists. So here we do have a case of a small minority having a big impact on public opinion. So I'm not sure how to exactly change that picture, because they are leveraging a whole host of popular feelings. But people already want to believe this, right? It's a simple explanation for terrorism. It's a simple explanation for, it feeds off of any frustrations you might have with the religious right. And I'm not sure we have things like that to feed off of, but then that might be wrong. Yes? I think they're united in certain respects. Certainly we're united about what they say about science. Anyway, we might be united about what we say about Jesus Christ. But they do have some very important divisions. There's divisions over whether they should call themselves right. There's divisions over whether transcendental meditation and Zen Buddhism is an okay expression of human things. So they have some serious divisions with themselves. They also have different concerns. But they do present a much more unified face to the world. No.
One more question, because I really don't want to cheat the next.
Yeah, the philosophically sophisticated atheists and agnostics really are ashamed in some respects in this movement. I mean, actually, Michael Shermer took them apart in the Kind of American. And some of the most nasty comments you will ever see used to be on the New Atheists website, where you have one atheist attacking another. Yeah, so there definitely are some deep rifts in the movement.
All right, I
will stay here as the moderator for the session. And now I want to introduce my colleague, Michael Everest, who teaches general and physical chemistry at Westmont. And he's developed a really nice exercise for talking about radiocarbon dating in the age of the Earth in a general chemistry course. He's going to tell us about it, and he's going to demonstrate it to us today. So I'll turn it over to Michael.
All right, thanks very much. I'm absolutely thrilled to be here. This is my third ASA meeting spread.